Joined again this week on The Green by contributor Larry Nagengast, who this week took a look at the COVID relief funding that is coming to the first state, specifically for the state's smaller cities and towns, and some of the questions that surround exactly how much money they're going to get and how they may spend it. Larry, we appreciate you taking some time to join us to talk about this piece.
I'm glad to be here, Tom.
So there are a lot of moving parts to this. Let's start with the formula. It's supposed to determine how these smaller municipalities get the funding that they're going to get. How does that work?
Well, the base formula for awarding the grants is based on population. The more people living in a city or town, the more it gets. Newark, for example, is in line for $17 million. Middletown, nearly $12 million. Smyrna and Milford are going to get about $6 million each. But there are 31 cities and towns that are due to receive less than $1 million apiece. Whether those municipalities get all that they might be that might be due to them ultimately is going to depend upon the size of their town budgets.
But as we often note on this program and in stories that you do, while this sounds very simple, the devil is in the details. And for example, the 75% of budget cap on the money that any individual town or city would get means, I guess, more people don't necessarily mean more money. Can you explain that?
Well, yes. The way the cap works, it hurts towns that have small budgets. And these are often the towns that rely on part-time workers and volunteer officials. So one of the best examples I can give is with two towns in Newcastle County, Newport and Bellefont, which each have a little bit more than 1,000 residents. The difference is that Newport has paid employees, including a police force, so its budget is about $1.5 million. But Bellefont, which relies largely on volunteers, has a budget of about $275,000. Now, because of this 75% budget cap rule, Newport will probably get its full population-based allocation, which is a bit over $500,000. But Bellefont is going to take a cap hit, and it's going to wind up with about $200,000.
Another unusual case that you point to is Arden in Newcastle County. Explain what sets their situation apart.
Well, among Delaware's towns, Arden and its neighboring Arden Town and Ardencroft are unique in ways that are, well, a bit too complicated to describe here. But the key difference is that while most towns have a council that approves its budget, Arden's is one that is voted on by its residents in a referendum, and the referendum is held every year. Now, the budget referendum document that Arden uses breaks down the town's total expenses into, quote, budget expenses and, quote, non-budget expenses. Now, how much Arden gets is going to depend upon what's allowed to count for budget purposes. If total expenses are allowed, the town will get about $220,000. If only what the town categorizes as budget expenses are allowed for the calculation, it would receive about $75,000. For a small town, that's a big difference.
So I guess ultimately this comes down to, for lack of a better term, showing your math, i.e. what's in your budget and how it all adds up. And apparently that's not as easy as it sounds either. Why is that?
Well, yeah, the towns do have to show their math. They have to send a copy of the budget that was being used in January of 2020, the date it was set in the Rescue Act, to the state treasurer for certification purposes. Now, what the treasurer has gotten so far is a set of budgets in varying formats. Some show a town's current operations only. Some show spending for operations and capital improvements. Some towns have separate budgets for each category. And as I mentioned, towns of similar populations can have significantly different budget totals depending upon whether they have paid employees or rely on volunteers. And now there's one other point that's worth noting here. Some towns didn't even have a written budget to follow. So they've had to backtrack and they've had to gather all of their expenses for a 12-month period and retroactively create a budget document that they could submit to the treasurer's office.
So does this all kind of reveal a flaw in the system here, that there's no uniform kind of budget format for these municipalities to follow, where at the very least that there's some just kind of like base ceiling requirements that they have to meet? And is that something that can or should be done?
Well, you know, I'm not sure that flaw is the right word, but, you know, yeah, it's definitely a problem. You know, not an everyday problem, because allocations of huge amounts of money don't come up often. But you can tell from some of the examples that I've given that some towns are going to feel that they didn't get a big enough piece of the pie. Now, seeing the variations in how the towns prepare their budgets has convinced the state treasurer's office that there ought to be more consistency. Some rules for how to classify different types of revenue and expenses, some way to look at the budgets for all of the towns and make easy comparisons. And, you know, this is important not only for allocating money, but it's also a benefit to the residents of the towns and of the states in terms of increased transparency on how these government entities spend their money. Now, two solutions do come to mind. One would be a state law to standardize budget formatting. The other would be to use some of the state share of the Rescue Act funding to provide some support services to the towns, setting up workshops, buying budget and accounting software for all of them, something along those lines, so that we would be providing the same documentation developed with the same set of rules, so there would be more of a sense of fairness when funds are distributed.
All right, so let's try to get out of the weeds just a little bit here and get back to the relief funds themselves. Once what each city is going to gets sorted out, what's next? I mean, how do they get this money, and what are the rules to spending whatever they're allocated?
Well, again, we know some of the basics. The money is expected to be distributed in two chunks. One, the first part of it they'll get this year, and the second part probably next year. And the towns will have until the end of the year 2024 to spend it. Now, it's not quite clear what the restrictions are going to be, but the purpose of this funding is primarily to cover expenses or to make up for revenues that were lost because of the pandemic. And, yeah, there is one very definite no-no that's already been published. The towns can't use this money to cut their property taxes.
So that's the one clear thing we do know. How about teaming up? Can cities and towns partner on common projects that would affect both of them, particularly if they're adjacent to each other?
Some of them hope so, but again, they're not quite sure that they can. That, again, is one of the items that the state treasurer is hoping to get some guidance on from the feds. Now, I talked briefly with Newcastle County government, and they say that they're willing to partner with local governments within their boundaries on projects of mutual interest. It's not quite clear exactly what the county might have in mind, whether we'll be talking about partnering with an individual town, such as a Newport or a Bellefonte or an Arden, or whether it would be talking about using money and going countywide. Now, and then in the case of Arden, Ardentown, and Ardencroft, those communities which are adjacent do have a history of trying to partner with each other on projects that are of mutual interest. So it's certainly a possibility if it turns out that the guy allowed to do so.
You've talked to a number of cities about their plans and how they're working through this. Have you seen any trends on what towns are kind of gravitating towards spending on? Does anything stand out in some of these initial thoughts that towns are having?
Well, you know, it might be a stretch again to say that there are trends, but a couple of things do stand out. First, and this does vary considerably by location, but just about every town did lose some revenue because of the pandemic. At the beaches, for example, the parking meters weren't being fed last summer. In Newport, fewer cars were on the road, so that meant that the police wrote fewer speeding tickets. There was less money collected for traffic fines. In Arden, there were no hall rentals and concerts at the Buzzware Community Center. Now, at the same time, the pandemic has changed the way towns conduct their business. Millville, for example, bought laptop computers for the town manager and the members of the town council so that they could work remotely. Millville was also among several towns that bought or expanded audiovisual systems so that they could hold their meetings remotely and so residents could listen or watch online. Now, other towns are thinking about expanding their meeting spaces so that they can maintain social distancing while going about their business. Now, also, you know, while infrastructure may be the word of the month as the folks down in Washington talk about the next big spending initiative, Delaware towns are already thinking about using rescue plan funds for their own infrastructure projects. Things like paving more roads, curb cuts on sidewalks, drainage projects, and dog parks. Outdoor stages for entertainment, for example. Delaware City is thinking about dredging silt and sediment from the Branch Canal, as well as ideas for making itself more of a tourism destination. You know, even tiny Little Creek might have some tourism promotion ideas in mind. Now, keep in mind, nobody knows right now how much money they're going to be getting, so all of this is pretty much at the brainstorming stage, and it'll probably be a couple of months before any of the towns make firm decisions on their spending priorities.
And they also have to see if some of those projects would pass muster, if they would actually even be things that these funds could go toward doing.
That's right, because you don't quite know exactly how these final guidelines are going to be written.
So the other thing that fascinated me in reading your story was that some cities are suggesting they may not want the money. Is that right?
Yes, indeed. That's what I've heard from State Treasurer Colleen Davis, but she's not naming names. She said she doesn't want to throw any of these towns under the bus. You know, who knows? Maybe they'll change their mind, whatever. Now, I did have the mayor of one very small town tell me that this budget cap rule would cut its share of what it might receive so much that by the time they got their check, it wouldn't even be enough to help them when they apply for matching grants for larger, more meaningful projects to meet their town's needs. Now, even so, I really don't see a good reason for a town not to take what's coming to them. I mean, even if they just put it in their rainy day fund and hope that something worthwhile comes up that they can spend it on before that deadline in December of 2024.
Or perhaps it would go into something we talked about earlier, partnering with their county or some other municipality to do something that where they could make that little bit of money go a little bit further.
Absolutely. It's always another possibility.
So having said all that, it does bring up the question of what happens with any unspent money. Do we know what happens if a town doesn't find enough qualifying projects or just simply, in this case, doesn't want the money? What happens to that money that doesn't get spent?
Well, okay. Well, you know, the short answer anyhow is that we really don't know for sure because as we said, all the guidance isn't out and a lot of different things can happen in the next 3 years. But it does appear that towns will have to return any money that they haven't spent by the 2024 deadline. Now, a more interesting question, however, is what happens to the money that isn't distributed because of this 75% budget cap rule, the difference between Bellefonte getting $206,000 and $590,000, for example. So does that money stay in Washington and never leave the U.S. Treasury? Does it get reallocated in Delaware, perhaps to other towns or to the counties? You know, is there a way of recalculating or revising the formula so that these small towns with low budgets get to keep it all? Maybe there's a way of doing that so that you can take into account the in-kind contributions of these unpaid volunteers who contribute to the towns. You know, all sorts of possibilities here. But make no mistake about it, the rescue plan funds will be a big help for many towns in Delaware. But as we've seen, there are a lot of questions that do need answers before the money arrives.
And questions we expect, Larry, that we will have you keep an eye on and update us as we learn more about who's getting what and what they're doing with it. Larry Nagengast, as always, we appreciate your time. We appreciate your reporting here on The Green.
Thank you, and I'm sure I'll be back later this summer to talk more about it.